see us or get underway slightly early. I'd just like to welcome everyone to the Finance and Court meeting of the 14th of June. Welcome to councillors, welcome to staff and visitors. We have one apology from Councillor Michael Deagle, we'll note that. Confirmation of the agenda, we have six papers today. We had one paper that was planned to be here a couple of weeks ago, councillor reimbursement. And during committee chairs we had a look at that and we decided there needs to be a bit more work done on it. So we have withdrawn that paper today and hopefully it will be here for the next committee round. Conflict of interest, I haven't been notified of any conflicts of interest. Public forum, no one has requested to speak today. Minutes of the last meeting, they have been circulated for adoption.
Have been moved, Mr Chairman.
Seconded by Councillor Carmen Hope. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Against, carried. Any matters arising from those minutes? No. As I say, there are six papers today. The biggest and most important is obviously the 2017-18 draft annual plan recommendations from the hearing committee. Obviously, we had a number of workshops to start this process, and we put out the draft plan in a consultation document, and from that we received 825 submissions and 43 submitters wanting to be heard. It's interesting to note that in 2016 we received 185 submissions. So those hearings took place in Queenstown, Alexander, Omru and Dunedin. In the draft document it details some items that vary very much from our long-term plan, and they're listed there, 1 to 6. It also had some other new activities up for discussion, and we've had quite a lot of feedback on those, and other submissions received on other topics. So I just thought we'd quickly run through the key consultation topics, one by one. If there's any comment, jump in, please. Civil defence and emergency management, we had two options there regarding funding. Any comment on that? So the recommendation is we'll go with what was the UAGC funding of that. Rural water, there's the environmental risk assessment and also the dairy one as well. So any comment on that? Councillor Woodhead?
quite a few submissions and responses on this you can see the hearing committee recommendations there around the environmental risks and wanting to work with a couple of supportive catchments in the first year. It's not something I'd consider needs the title of a trial, but it's to ensure that we work with the industry and the landholders as we implement this program. So we're suggesting that staff come back to council with options for a slightly revised approach there, and it's absolutely essential that we get the uptake and from landholders and the involvement and work with take the industry with us on this one, Mr Chairman. And so that's the reason that we consulted on a third of the region per year. But there were some good suggestions came through from some strong and well thought through submissions that the panels picked up and some further work required there. But I say that also being very clear that we need to get underway with this, this current year. So it's a sooner rather than later, and still the commitment there. It's just how it's undertaken.
Yeah, I think as you say, the key thing is we have our staff to come back to us, giving consideration to the submissions we received. I think there's certainly a view perhaps we need to do it more on a catchment basis, sort of getting the local catchments involved, such as Palmerhaka and Noslam, but that we'll wait for those for that reporting back to us and to the whole council. Any other comment on that? There's a dairy one as well.
Just briefly, Mr Chairman, I think that when that report comes back, I think that just highlights will highlight that concern where we as a council are the policy centre and regulator. And obviously in the time of some of the submissions, there was clearly some nervousness about having those inspections done by ORC staff, and you know, where that third party may just help to soften, it's probably the image, and just to help that process, and you can understand, I'm sure the report that will come forward to help progress those visits in a less, I think, less threatening way, and that may just be, may not be quite the right word, but in a way that I suppose seems more transparent looking in from the outside within this organisation. Yeah. It's not a criticism, I just think it's a reality, and I'm sure we can work our way through it, and using, as the chairman and yourself have alluded to, there are third parties here that are keen to put their hand up on a catchment basis, and we look forward to that process hopefully coming to fruition.
Yeah, I agree with that, and in fact it's a voluntary sort of approach that we've got to be very careful we don't undermine that.
Yeah.
Councillor?
Oh, I was just wondering the timing for the report coming back so that the community can have some certainty about what we're proposing in the rating, I guess. Would it be ASAP?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, those meetings have begun internally on the basis that we'll support this. So my expectation is by the next committee round you will have a report. We have to move that quickly because, as the Chairman said, as Councillor Woodhead said, we need to get on with this.
Yeah, and sorry, can I just say one other quick comment would be around, understand voluntary action and the importance of building relationships in Pomahaka and Moslem. We've got some really brilliant community engagement already. There are other catchments, I guess, which require some focus and haven't so much got that third party support at the moment too, so just be aware and coming up with programs going forward that perhaps Pomahaka and North seem a little bit different from other scenarios.
Yep.
Yeah,
thank you. Councillor Laws?
Yes, thank you. This is a massive issue, obviously, so I'm not going to oppose any move to make the right decision rather than the quick one. I guess the question I have of this, and remember this is the first time I've seen this paper since yesterday, so I only got it yesterday because of the problems we've been having with communications in general. So the question I have two questions of you, Doug, I guess, as chairman of this proposal. Who are the third parties that you're thinking of doing this and involved in this? Because it seems to me a fundamental role of the Otago Regional Council to take control of monitoring and compliance. And I think the idea that any third party is involved in doing a function that is a primary responsibility, I see, would be counterproductive. The second issue is it the intention when you draft this paper that you will then put that paper out for further community consultation or only consultation with affected parties?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure whether we're trying to define affected parties under an RMA framework. There are a group of people, landowners with properties greater than 2 hectares, will be affected by this rural water part of the plan. And we need a program which will assist them to assess their own probability of being compliant with our laws. So we've got some catchment groups that are already working and working very well, and they've been named. And I think it would be fair to say that those catchments are the catchments where we're likely to have the greatest challenge. They are the catchments where we've got intensive agriculture, and I think they are up and running. And to me, it's relatively straightforward for those groups because they are underway. The work we're doing with forestry, which is another big land user in our region, and also a land use type that could cause significant environmental impact at harvest time and replanting time, we have a good working relationship with them. They don't have an industry body like other sectors do, and I think it would be fair to say the relationship we have with them, and Scott might like to comment, is that we are pretty involved with that group. So that's a group that's perhaps unlike the agricultural sector that we're involved in, and that will continue. The other piece of work though that we do have to do in-house is that desktop analysis about where we're going to think that we're going to have the greatest challenges. And so we're not putting, as I read this, all of our eggs in the basket of giving Dairy NZ or Beefham Land New Zealand or Pomahaka Capital Group all of this money. This is augmenting some of the work that they will be doing by possibly engaging with them to work with us in this project. The rest of the project will be done internally, and we will have our communication effort, which will be very much branded OIC, as I read it as the Chief Executive. I'm having these discussions with the staff. We're in our early stages of reviewing what we put to the annual plan, and I think it will be augmenting existing groups as opposed to devolving our responsibility.
So does that answer your question?
Well, the next question is, when we come up with the concept of how it's going to work, is who are we consulting with to make sure, are we going to consult it or not?
Well, we won't consult in the RMA way. We will be having discussions with the third parties because, as Councillor Robertson commented, we have to make sure that if we are going to ask them to assist us, that they've got the resources. So we will be having discussions, let's call them, rather than consultations. But I don't think we'll consult publicly, Mr. Chairman. I think this is something that we are being asked to bring back to this committee.
I think in some ways it will be horses depending on what's actively happening there now. Obviously, we've got some active catchment groups, some catchments, there's nothing happened, so. Councillor Scott?
Look, I think the key thing with this is that we do need to get on with it. I think also there will be some learnings in our first step,
yep.
and some people have referred to that as a trial step. That may or may not be right, but I think there will be some learnings, and ideally we're able to adapt as we go through. I'm a little bit nervous about this third party, but if they're professionals and there's a contract, then maybe that's okay. From my perspective, it's a little bit also about building up some steam and understanding towards 2020, you know, because what we do in 6 months' time might be that the similar time will tell in terms of 3 or 4 years' time. And so this is all part of the process. In terms of consultation, we've done more than enough consultation. It's time for delivery. And I think we'll see in other parts of the report today that there's some improvements that are required.
Councillor Woodhead?
Oh, just to reinforce that, the consultation has been done as part of the annual plan. This is a block of work. And the question that's been asked is how we're going to do that block of work, essentially. And there's from assistance, there's the organisations that are listed just above the recommendation there, Beefham and Dairy NZ, for example. We've got the catchment groups, but with the actual delivery of the program, there may be an opportunity, for example, for consultants to deliver part of this program on behalf of OIC. That's something that staff will address, I'm sure, in the report back to us. But I'll just remind us that there was strong support from the submitters, I think 650-odd or something, actually saying, yep, get on with it, but let's have a chat about the how.
Okay, that's good. Dairy inspections, any comment on that? I guess this was just a slightly different way of doing it. So on the spaces. Everyone happy with that? Move on to minimum flows and deemed permit use for placement. We've accelerated the program for minimum flows and the activity in the deemed water permit. We're trying to get groups to work together. Any comment on that? Increased activity. Both those. Everyone happy?
Yeah. See strong support from submitting also, Mr. Chairman. The challenge for us will be delivering on it.
Yep.
Getting on with it.
Okay, we'll move on to public transport in Wakatipu. Once again, it's got strong support from our consultation with the community. And obviously increasing the targeted rate quite significantly to undertake that with low fares with the go-kart. Any comment?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, if I may, this is a critical part of getting the new enhanced public transport in the Wakatipu actually on the road, and a significant sum of money, $600,000 from a targeted rating base, and it's one part of it, along with support from QLDC and NZTA, and there were some submitters who wished, hadn't picked up the point that it was coming from that targeted ratepayer base, and a couple in Dunedin or elsewhere in the region said, you know, I'm not paying for Queenstown buses. Well, they're not. So that, and along with the extension to Jack's point, are critical parts of getting this up and going in the later part of this year.
Yeah, the extension to Jackport was whether it should be a target, part of the targeted rating base, and it got strong support. Any further comment? If not, we'll move on to Queenstown office. Once again, it's basically asking, should we establish a Queenstown office this year or leave it until the long-term plan process next year? It's a pretty close vote, but 327 versus 356 against, but the hearing panel recommends that it should happen this coming financial year, albeit on maybe a lower staffing rate, as a lot of people gave us feedback that for 4 to 5 permanent staff are probably not needed at this stage, so that maybe 1 to 2 staff plus hotties, visiting staff. Any comment on that? Sorry, Mark.
Well, just given those figures, on what basis is the committee making it?
But they have been broken. They have been broken down quite a bit, and it's obviously people from other areas other than QLDC that were sort of saying it should happen next year in the long-term annual plan. So there's a lot of support.
I'd have to say I wouldn't have considered there was a hurry, but however.
So there's a lot of support in the local area for it to happen this coming year. Councillor Woodhead, you got any comment there? Oh. Sorry, Michael.
I was going to say, I think it's disappointing that we've retreated from what was the proposal. And in actual fact, I haven't seen any evidence during the submission process that you would diminish the presence in Queenstown.
Well, there was actually there was mentioned a number of times that, you know, perhaps it's a bit overkill, but you know, it's a case of suck and see, like they said. Some have said what we had there previously was okay, but obviously there's great activity in that area that needs to increase, but I said that was...
If you've only got 1 or 2 staff, that means for good sections of the year you're not going to have anybody, because, and it's just the reality of it, the sick leave and annual leave and things like that, and that's not a presence. It's not even a presence as shadow. I mean, the deal was that we consulted on was that we would establish an office in the fastest growing area in New Zealand. And that we would do that for 2 reasons. The first was because we detected, and rightly so, an environmental need there. And the third was to create a location, or rather a communication channel, which had been proven to be dislocated. Well, I can't support a proposal that in which we diminish our presence there, having consulted on the intention to do so. And I am concerned that in many cases, many weeks of the year, there won't be a presence there at all.
Well,
because of the staffing and the way it works.
Well, there is the opportunity to bring staff in with hot desk. Well, okay, any further comment on that then?
answering Councillor Neil's question a little bit, and just reminding ourselves that these things are not a vote as such, but there were some good comments came through, and we had several submitters, one of them in this office, a Dunedin person, but a number of others also, that identified some challenges for the Queenstown Lakes District area. For example, with the movements to, as a result of rapid growth and demand for housing, the movements to some alternative or amended legislation, the I can't remember the title of it, the rapid housing legislation that's there at the moment. And as a result of that, there's a bit of a challenge for the Regional Council that is is not necessarily getting left out of, but at times there are decisions being made where issues around hazards or flooding or and the likes are not taken account of duly. And there was several examples given to us during hearings where it was critical that we had someone on the ground in Queenstown, and we didn't have it on one example, and it was the next day, which was fine. But as a basis for having an office, and actually this decision is Mr. Bodek's, and we're suggesting that as long as we've got some staff in Queenstown at all times, so I understand Councillor Law's point, but I'm sure it can be managed by the Chief Executive to ensure there was always a public face and somebody there managing those issues around holidays and leave and the normal processes with respect to employment. But it was very clear to me sitting on the panel that we needed a presence there, and I think the recommendation says that. Mm-hmm. It is important to have a presence in Queenstown. And there are some issues as a result of this growth and development, speed up building processes or development processes, that means it's absolutely essential that we have some staff on the ground to be part of those processes. And it's my view that it can't be left to the long-term plan. The details, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4 or 5, I think is the Chief Executive's responsibility. And how he can resource and look at the space available, a whole range of things will need to be taken into account there. But hopefully that's just helpful. But it was certainly hey, these speed up processes, do you realise, you know, there's some, potentially some challenges here, Regional Council, that was something that I wasn't aware of and does concern me a little bit. And it's something I think we need to interact with. All those chief executives between our council and Queenstown Lakes need to be aware of.
I guess the other thing was a recommendation that should be located in Franklin as opposed to the CBD.
Yes,
Councillor Lord.
No, I'm sorry, Gretchen.
Oh, you go.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I just want to. I mean, I share Stephen's view on that, and that's why Stephen, I'm saying I think we need a greater presence there. I feel a little bit sorry for the Chief Executive getting stuck in the middle of this one too, saying, oh, well, we'll leave it to you to do staffing numbers, mate. Because I think that we actually need to, you know, say to the Chief Executive and Governance Body, we want to establish a full-time presence in Queensland. And then that's what Peter needs. He needs to know that for 52 weeks of the year, 40 hours a week, we're going to have a presence in Queenstown servicing that Queenstown Lake Central area. And I think that if we could give that instruction to Peter, make him his job a lot easier, just quietly. So I'd like to sort of beef up on that one. Then it's up to Peter how he arranges his staff, of course. On the Franklin issue, it's the obvious place to go. So there's no doubt or dispute about that. But I just think on the first one, we're being a bit unfair on Peter. I think we should set a firmer governance direction.
Councillor Robertson.
I think that pretty much says what I was going to say. We've heard from the hearings panel that we need a presence in Queenstown, and we've heard that that space needs to be flexible. So, and we've also heard that it's Peter's role to fill that where he sees necessary for staff. So I think merging all that together, yes, we go ahead with a space in Queenstown, but make it flexible enough that if we do in the next year need 3 or 4 staff up there and it doesn't affect budgets too much, then that's what we have. Peter's signalled that to us before, that's what's required. And yeah, I haven't heard anything different than that at this point either. So I understand, I wasn't there for the hearings, but certainly as a minimum 1 to 2 staff, and yeah, ability to fill it is required as well.
Thank you, Councillor Noon.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. For me, on the panel, I felt that we were in a transitional phase, and the 1 or 2 staff members suggested in their recommendation was taking into consideration in a transitional stage, I'd say. But we've already got staff in Central Otago and wider Central Otago district, so it allows the chief some flexibility over the next 12 months just to see what mix and match can occur as well, because there's a certain skill set within central, particularly us and Alex, that suit certain aspects of this organisation. So I was comfortable with 1 and 2 in the interim, and then obviously review it as time goes on, and if it needs to be upped, well, let's deal with that when that time comes.
Okay.
Mr Chairman.
I think we hear the message we're getting from the last four speakers is that there needs to be flexibility in this. Maybe 1 or 2 is perhaps not enough, but I guess it's incumbent in a delegation to the CEO to work that through. Councillor Kempton.
I think the old story, we need to go back to why this became an issue at all. We had one person in an office in Queenstown, and that person was regarded as quite important, not for their professional expertise, but as much for their communication. The fact is there's somebody there that LRC that people could go and talk to. And then there was some disappointment when that person disappeared. The one thing we haven't actually talked about at all, and which is part, in my view, of the direction that we should be giving to the chief executive, is to actually make some assessment of what services are actually needed to be based right in Queenstown, beyond the one that I would agree with, which is a personal presence. There's somebody there with a personal presence and a communication one, and which could not be served by our second largest office, which is 50 minutes drive away, and which is, you know, a fraction of a second by email. And I think that I sensed there were people talking about Queenstown who didn't actually know that we had an office in Alexandra. And the other thing we need to keep in mind too is not saying, well, we've got to have all these people in the middle of Queenstown, not sure what they're going to do yet, but we've got to have them. When, in fact, of course, in terms of our resource usage and the number of people involved, it's the rural parts of CODC and QLDC, other places, that are getting most of the attention and that probably need it. And so I think that we just have to make sure that there is some study done about what the needs, what resource needs really are in that urban area. And I would just extend the thoughts that we've given to Peter on that, rather than just saying it's all about numbers. It isn't about numbers at all, it's about service.
Councillor Bell.
As being a member of the hearings panel also, I'd like to say that I support Councillor Noon and Councillor Kempton on those previous comments. And it was pointed out to me by one of the submitters there that Queenstown is not unique. It's a global resort, the same as any other global resort around the world. And he expressed that the difficulty it is in getting staff, and he said that DOC can't get staff to go into Queenstown because of the expense of being there. So I do believe this 1 to 2 stage, and we go from there. And as that submitter also indicated to me, like other parts around the world with these type of global resorts, you've got to expect that somebody can be there within an hour, which would be from Alex, or half an hour from Cromwell or whatever. So they are the expectations that a community like Queenstown will have. But I do believe we do need an area manager type person, that Colin Walker type person. I know the importance that that person had in the link in that community. And if we could establish that sort of thing, I think that would take a lot of the way of the fears that Mr. Councillor Laws would have. It's that link that we need to build with the QLDC and the community. And I think that that's where we should be going, and try and rely on the expertise within a half an hour to 50 minutes away to supplement the 1 or 2 staff press.
Okay.
So I'm less sure now than I was when I read this. We have 2 offices in the 5 offices that we have currently got, where if you come to the front desk, you can ask to speak to somebody from the RIC, and that is the Alexandra office and this office. The other offices in Oamaru and Wanaka and Cromwell have staff there, but there is no guarantee that there will be somebody at the front desk. There is no front desk. Because the Queenstown office, and the sort of services to answer Councillor Kenton's questions, we need somebody there around our investigation / compliance area, and we need someone there around consent. I think they are the two key points. There is some discussion as to whether or not we may need in the future somebody around public transport, and I think there's possibility we would, / communications. So maybe three areas of expertise. Do you then put on top of that, or as well as that, or in support of that, a front of house person, what we used to call a receptionist? Because he or she would then at least be able to man the staff, the desk, for the times that they were not on leave or on breaks. Now, I could manage that. You could sort of try and work it on the basis that those other staff are there, but it's not easy when you've only got three for the points that Council Law said. So that's the only direction I need, Mr. Chairman, if you want to proceed with this discussion today. Is it a fully staffed office? Does it have a reception desk with a reception person?
Could it not, through you, Mr. Chairman, do it the same as CODC, where QLDC still provide that reception? I know if you've got an office in Frankton and that, but with all they do at the end of the day, nobody runs out of the CODC office across to the ORC office and say the so-and-so or whatever. It's all tapped on a computer or back to here or communication. And so therefore, obvious to me, the reception aspect would come, it could be well worked with the QLDC the same way as we have with the ORC.
Councillor Robertson.
So the answer I'll say is yes, we need some sort of reception manned. We need to be with the BART service. We definitely need to be able to answer questions and sell the product. We have civil defence type questions. We've got all the other consents, planning, urban water, all sorts of stuff coming up. But whether or not that's shared with the Queenstown rates, which if we're based in Frankton wouldn't be, we need a receptionist and we need some staff. So yeah, I don't think the one or two's gonna cut it either at this point.
Councillor Lewis.
I'd like to hear from Councillor Robertson's motion, I guess, that we guess should eventually turn into. The other thing is, can I just also point out, I'm a bit concerned, having lived there now, that you've got the office in the wrong place anyhow. The obvious place for the office for Central Otago is in Cromwell, because it's so equidistant between Alexandra and Queenstown and Wanaka. You're 50k, 35k from Alex, 50k from, and that's why so many businesses are going there. That's why the Central Otago Polytechnic is locating all its facilities, or relocating all its facilities into Cromwell. But now you've got one in Alex, fine, then you've got to do what you've got. So you've got this mismatch. It's not 50 minutes, it's at least 90k, Trevor, from Queenstown to Alexandra, and often, and certainly in winter, inhospitable conditions, which makes transport very difficult through the gorge and through that area. I want to back up, second the motion, that we have a full-time presence, that we have a full-time office located in the Queenstown area, and then leave the staffing to the Chief Executive. But I think it's very important that today, as governments, we make that policy decision and instruct the Chief Executive accordingly, and let him make the detailed decisions from there.
Okay, Lauren, do you get the gist of that? There were a number mentioned about the Cromwell option, in our submitters.
Yeah.
I guess we've got what we've got, and the thing about it too, we also got a submission from QLDC to say that talk to them in the future when they sort out their office, so maybe there could be an opportunity then to go in with them, depending on where they put their office. So.
They were going to move to Frankton, but they've had a large number of retailers come to them and say, please don't.
Yeah. But however, I guess we've just got to wait and see. So is everyone clear about that? Do we have a seconder for that?
I'll move.
Oh, you're moving, sorry.
Inspection's moving and I'll see.
Yeah. All good? Discussion on that? Everyone happy? Okay, I'll put it. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
Against.
Against. Sorry.
No.
No. One against. It's passed. Thank you. The next one was the low ITAC control scheme. We had Castalia do a review of the scheme in terms of the funding, and their recommendation was that 10% of it should come out of the general rate as opposed to nil before. Is there any comment on that? It was quite strongly supported. 334 versus, oh no, it was reasonably close, but it was in favour. So the recommendation is we go with the Castalia report. Any comment on that? Okay, we'll move on to other areas. First one was other new activities was the Lake Snow. The fact we're going to contribute $100,000 towards the research of Lake Snow, funded from general rates. Any comment on that? Councillor Scott.
This $100,000 on research, so what exactly is it going to be spent on?
Well, I guess it's our contribution to the initial research into Lake Snow. It does mention the fact that we're not at the stage where it justifies more money at this stage, so that was the recommendation from the hearing panel.
Okay, and the total research expenditure is what?
Well, that may be up in the air now, Mr. Deacon, is it? I mean, for Mr. Bodie.
Well, Dr. Farmer's probably best to comment.
Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, it's a sum of $100,000 and it is the program of further research endorsed by the Technical Committee in March. I have reproduced it as Appendix A of my direct report for Technical Committee.
Yep, thank you for that. Any comment? Councillor Laws?
I've just got two questions for us. First is $100,000 enough? And second, is that an arbitrary sum? Because I'd like to get some idea of how that $100,000 is going to be spent, and I'm sure you understand.
Yes, I do. Yeah. Through you, Mr. Chairman, the $100,000 is enough to deliver the highest priority items identified at the experts' workshop. The components of the $100,000 are set out in Appendix A of my director's report this afternoon, and itemises the four or five things that make up the $90,000 relative to $100,000. And those are the things that have been identified by the experts as the priority issues.
And who will be undertaking the research?
Most of the research is likely to be undertaken by a CRI and or a university.
We've got active staff involved in that, haven't we? Like one of our staff's been looking at it.
The $100,000 is the external research component, and then there's about $20,000 of internal staff time to manage and contribute to that research, but it will be outsourced because it's research.
Yeah. Any further comment on that? Look at the recommendation. Okay, lake restoration scoping work. This is around the three lakes. The Ekapoto, Tomahawk and obviously Lake Hayes.
Mr. Chairman, I've made quite a lot of feedback on this proposal. There was some assumptions that we hadn't provided the clarity of the where this expenditure was likely to go. My understanding is around $60,000 for scoping up options for Lake Hayes, and then the remainder for the other two lakes. But I think we need to be clear that this is just the scoping phase, and it will inform some potential actions that will flow through into the long-term plan. The hearings committee supported that proceeding forward. Yeah.
Any comment on this? Obviously Lake Hayes was the focus of a lot of the submissions. Yes, as Councillor Woody said, it's to get us to a stage where we can get some ideas what we need to do through next year's long-term plan. Councillor Kempton.
Yes, when we were receiving feedback in Queenstown, I sensed there was some real concern about, well, you're going to throw another $60,000 at Lake Hayes. Is this going to be trying to work out what to do? but I sensed some relief when we said, well, it's going to cost $60,000 for us to come up with a list of ways in which we can actually improve this lake, and then we can act on that. And I sensed that there was a significant amount of relief, unlike the Lake Snowfield, of course, which is some distance from ever getting to that point, if it's ever reached. And so this is one stage further on than most of the other work that's been done around lakes, and I sensed that that was well received.
Councillor Robertson.
Supportive of this is good. Just would like to see just a note, a higher order look at our priorities and principles around restoration in Otago, so that there's three have been pulled out and are getting further work, but what are our requirements legislatively, what are our priorities, and what are the issues for, in this instance, the shallow lakes and deep lakes. We've got other ones as well in Otago, and where are we heading with this type of work? We need to understand the full picture for Otago as well.
I just want to second everything that Gretchen has just said. I'm really concerned that what we're doing at the moment is just arbitrarily picking up lakes and looking at them individually. If we were going to do a scoping study, Doug, I think that we should be scoping, you know, frankly, all the lakes in the central area, and particularly in the Otago regional catchment. I might be alone on this one, obviously, but I think, shouldn't we be doing, if we're going to do a scoping study, wouldn't it be a good idea to include all the lakes in that scoping study rather than just identifying three? Because one of the things that I remember from the presentation that was given to us by Professors Hamilton and Dr. Stellenberg was along priority issues, the lakes that were in greatest need of, greatest danger signals connected to them. And then going on down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then scoping those studies from there, and I think that would be a very useful piece of work to come to our council. So I'm just flagging that rather than doing it for three, I'd like to see it done for all the lakes in the Otago region, a scoping study that identifies in particular those lakes most at risk and most likely to respond to restoration. That's the first thing. The second thing is I'm really worried about Hayes. It's a really simple issue in Hayes, and the Hayes issue is the stuff that's going into Hayes making the lake sicker, and can we stop the stuff going in that does so? I don't know that we need another scoping study. I think there's plenty of research that's already currently available to us. I could be wrong, Kevin, but there seems to be plenty of study already done on Hayes, and really the issue then is, what are we going to do next on Hayes? Have I got that wrong? Or are you still needing more work on Hayes?
The lake's been the subject of significant amounts of research over decades. The problem is well understood. The annual plan activity is moving towards restoration, so it's taking two or three of the options previously reported with rough order costs and turning those into more detailed projects, if you like, with timelines and firmer cost estimates, and then consulting with the community on those, as well as how you might fund them. So this is moving into actual restoration as opposed to scoping generally what you might do. This is a path towards restoration. It's not a scientific study. We have enough of those.
And I guess it's probably driven by community response to some degree, isn't it? Like this, it's just that people in these particular three lakes have been quite active. Councillor Woodhead?
Yes, just like to reiterate that. The other thing that came out in submissions has appeared to be some confusion, you know, in thinking that we were going to ignore the monitoring on Lake Hayes. That's not the case. There's an intensive program in place and that will continue. But as Dr. Palmer has just outlined, this is a here's some options that, yes, there's been some discussion in Lake Hayes' case about, but let's investigate them a bit more, understand some of the technical detail around it and the probability that it would assist and what it's going to cost. So they're important aspects to then go to the community and say, all right, let's work together to see if we can improve this lake, and here's some options. I don't accept that we're randomly selecting these lakes that we've consulted on. We've had a strong community involvement in all three of them over decades, in just about all cases. Tomahawk, I think, dropped off our radar for a while, but it's certainly been back loud and strong in the last 2 or 3 years, 4 years. All those communities have made it quite clear that they'd like to be involved in some improvement, and that shouldn't stop the thinking around. I think it's important that we do put in place some principles, as Councillor Robertson's outlined, and because there's a number of other opportunities around the region too. But I think it's good at this point to actually say, enough, what's the next stage? Lake Te Awatauta, actually, we've been involved in restoration some 12, 15 odd years ago, the first part of it, but there's another opportunity now to go the next step. And I'd like to remind the committee that this is the first step for, eventually, for ORC. We've in the past monitored, reported, technical reports, had lots of conversation, but we've never gone this next step before. And there is potential for, and this time next year, to be signing off some actual works of some description to start a program that will hopefully improve, restore some of these programs. So, the assessment hasn't been random. It's been building up for a number of years, and we've added put these three on the list.
Certainly at Lake Hayes, I recall the whole of council visit to Lake Hayes as part of a visit to QRDC. It was part of the focus of that visit to look at Lake Hayes, and it was deemed at that time that it wasn't sort of financially viable or physically viable to do much about the lake, but we need to have a good close look at it and get to a stage where we do have some solutions. Councillor Scott?
Yeah, I'd just like to concur with what Councillor Woodhead said, and I was going to say similar things. For me, there's two separate exercises. One is the three lakes and the next step, and the second exercise is what Councillor Robinson alluded to, is a more holistic view of the region and what other lakes are there with similar issues and what is their priority. I'm sure that when Dr. Palmer comes back with his information on these three lakes, including costs and options and so forth, that doesn't mean to infer that we have an agreement and understanding about who's going to pay what. There'll be some significant money involved, and what parties need to be involved is, I think, a future discussion. This for future discussion.
Yep. Any further comment? Well, if not, I think the hearing panel's recommendations accept it. We'll note the comments from councillors. Wallabies? We consulted on that it'd be funded at a general rate. Was it $276,000 or something? Generally got favourable support. 519 versus 12. Any comment on that? If not, we'll move on to the next one. Feedback received on other issues, that's basically. So, about that. Where are we? Yep. Wild and tree control. We have quite a few submissions on that, obviously, mainly in Queenstown. Sorry, on this one.
Yeah, I might just make a comment on the climate change adaptation, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, generally good support. We do have some deniers, shall we say, but I think it's important to note that yes, we've got some work going on with the city and South Dunedin, but actually, there's other parts of our region which have challenges. And certainly South Otago and the Paratai area, the Clupa Delta, and the question in the annual plan was, should we be using the Kurraway Reserve to fund some work there, and it got good support, and important we continue on with that.
$69,000.
I might have missed something. Is there somewhere else in the budget where climate change is addressed other than here? So I went looking last night and couldn't find anywhere, and now drove down.
Mr. Donnelly, Mr. Palmer.
No, this is the primary area. Climate change considerations come into all of our work, but in terms of an express climate change adaptation item, these are it.
Which is what I was going to raise in this issue now. It's the fundamental issue or environmental issue of our time. I don't think not doing anything about it is an option. And one of the things that I'd like to see the Otago Regional Council doing, and I'm sorry, I thought it was in there and then went looking for it last night and couldn't find it, which is why I'm asking the question, is into how the Otago region in general researches the potential for climate change and its effects upon the environment that we look after. And I was wondering if there was any intention to do any work this year or in the long-term plan next, because it's just such a fundamental piece of our responsibility.
Mr. Chairman, I think the long-term plan is where the executive's thinking is that conversation will be had. It's looking at the whole of the environment that we will be responsible for managing, you know, 10 years and 15 years out, of which climate change will have a significant input. So I think the best place for this council to have this discussion is as you came up the long-term plan and we as a group, that's where it needs to sit.
Dr. Palmer?
I've got nothing to add.
Yeah.
It's
where
so if we come to the long-term plan next year, then please.
I think we have done some work in the past, like the LIDAR survey, for example, that was connected to climate change and sea level rise and all that.
We have, and the thinking of the executive at the minute is in long-term plan, a piece of work for climate change impacts widely on Otago in terms of biodiversity and not just natural hazards, but wider impacts on our environment.
Yep.
That's what we're thinking about.
It's probably worth noting that if you take the RPS, for example, there's a whole lot of climate change policy intertwined into those policy documents. So, just picking up on Mr. Palmer's comment, the budget there may look smaller, but already a lot of the ORC policy has climate change consideration intertwined into essentially within those policies that have been developed in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years. It's not being ignored from a policy point of view, I suppose.
Yeah.
Is my point.
No. It's very clear in the RPS as well.
Okay, we note those comments. Sorry, Councillor.
No, I was just going to say, I think what Councillor Lynch says is important, in that there is significant guidance in the RPS around the effects of climate change, essentially. Which of course the TFAs can take away and as they're required to do to give effect to those. So from the point of view of what the TFA's response to climate change will be, then there is high level policy guidance already there. We've also, of course, from a natural hazards perspective and from the LIDAR surveys and so on, are certainly keeping pace with that. But the third strand, or third leg of the treble, if you like, which Dr. Palmer has talked about, that's another one again, and yes, I see that as pretty important. I think the point that Councillor Noon made was important.
Okay, it's on our radar. Any other comment? If not, move on to Wilding Pines. We have a number of submissions on that, mainly in Queenstown. The council decided that we would increase our contribution to that by $100,000, which is from the general rate. Comments on this?
So it's a targeted.
Oh yes, sorry.
Property
across all ways.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Targeted. Especially UAG in some respects, isn't it?
So just to reinforce your comments there, Mr. Chairman, it was felt that by a number of submitters that the process was in place. We have a national strategy. We have Crown funding commitment. It's actually being delivered on the ground in Otago. And I can't remember the total number Sorry, but I mean a couple of the bits were $1.2 million annually from the Crown. We're getting 25% of the national spend of wild conifers in Otago. Significant contributions coming from QLDC, and the wider community funding as well as landholder inputs. And it was a firm and clear case put to us that the 100,000 wasn't enough from the region. And when you looked at the total expenditure, and so the recommendation is, as you can see, and that doubles the rate from a per property perspective. It adds another $1.07.
Yeah, I think so. I was just reading a bit of media comment about it when the government funding was first announced. In fact, it is just for 4 years.
Yes.
And then where to from then? And, you know, this is the first step. So
yes,
no doubt further on down the track, consideration will be given to where to from then, depending where we are.
Yep.
Any further comment? You like out that? Okay, we'll move on to needing building review. The panel basically said that, you know, as we've always known, the building will be consulted separately at some stage in the immediate future. And we've got new data about our proposal for proper consultation. Any comment on that? And also in that consultation, we will be looking at the options, as I've mentioned, where they build, lease, remodel, etc., etc. Any comment? No comment? We'll move on to air quality. 9 submissions received about that. And we noted the development of air strategy and ongoing work involved in this area. There was one request for the Franklin, an air monitor in Franklin. We decided against that now. And someone, Dr. Palmer, yeah. Well, I understand this, but already been a lot of work done in that area.
Yes, from a technical point of view, it wasn't something that we absolutely needed, but could be done for $20,000 or $60,000 if you wanted to deal with the submitter's concern, which was around vehicle emissions.
Mm. I guess a lot of this work has been staff delegation to do the work as required, so I presume that remains. Mr. Kempton?
Yes, just a point that Dr. Palmer made was is an important one, in that the there was a submission around vehicle emissions. Now, the only chance we've got to reduce that is by public transport process and so on. And it seems to me that beyond that, we are going to be able to have a little impact on vehicle emissions, so therefore the monitoring, to my mind, is not the simplest point of doing that.
Thanks for that. Everyone okay? The next one is the Environmental Enhancement Fund, basically $250,000 per year being taken out of reserves. And comment was also made that it's not for use, not for operational costs. It was made by the committee.
So it's ongoing support for that, Mr. Chairman. Quite good,
yep.
Support. And there was one request for 2 submitters, sorry, the doubling of it. But actually, I think our view is that it's sitting about the right level. And,
yep.
And so. There's still some money in the kitty, in fact, this year.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if you'll notice in the report, which I think is the finance report, one of the reports today, you'll notice that we've got $75,000 of additional money, which was a diversion that we did, and so we got the diversion put into that account. So that's just another way of perhaps supplementing it
Okay, everyone good with that? Harbour Matters, there was obviously some discussion about that this morning, but the Hearing Committee recommends the RSC accept the offer from the DCC to jointly resource a harbour management plan addressing the issue. So everyone happy with that?
Yep.
Very good.
Yep. Lag recycling, 20 submissions on that. and the council deemed that we should put in an extra 25,000 in addition to the additional money to put in, and be funded from a separate rate from Central Otago and Queenstown District Lakes. Councillor Laws.
Can I ask why $25,000 was arrived at? I think $50,000 is inadequate, but at least Liz turned up and said, listen, we'll put in 50 if you put in 50. And I thought it was conditional too.
No.
They're going to put it in anyhow, they just challenge you to match them.
Lynn's?
Yes.
Lynn's money, in my understanding, Mr. Chairman, is it's not conditional.
Yep. Okay, all right.
And so Lynn's is the landowner. There's a land occupier that I'm sure Lynn's will be talking to also. One of the things that became apparent to us during the Lynn's update, and I think it was referred to in a couple of submissions, is this pathway management and the risk from Lake Dunstan to other waterways, primarily Lake Wakatipu and the Frankton Arm in particular. And that was from memory, and Councillor Noon and others on the panel might be clearer, that thought that we're not primarily responsible for this, but we are a stakeholder. We have contributed some funds to actual control of lake recycling in Lake Wakatipu, for example, and some contribution, and $25,000 seemed appropriate in this case. If the other two parties come to join, and one of them has obviously very clearly made it obvious that they would, it essentially would double the control expenditure of Lake Dunstan and to manage those high value areas.
Yeah, I think there was consideration, as you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, was that maybe contact would come to the party, and they are being approached for the other 25,000,
right.
So to basically double the maintenance work then done on the lake.
Yep.
Well, I mean, first of all, I think it's all accepted that the current maintenance work on the lake is inadequate and isn't doing the job with the current funding. But the second one is, I mean, we have been saying this, Stephen, for a long time, that, you know, if you don't do it, look after it in Dunstan, it will spread. So, I mean, it's not a new message that Lynn's have given you. The reality is that 25k is still a desultory amount of money. And I don't understand still the reluctance to do something about this. From Lake Wanaka, which was the source of lake recycling, apparently, I think it's still, $470,000 a year? But it's more likely to spread from Lake Dunstan to other lakes than it is from Lake Wanaka. Go figure. Why would you play around with managing in Lake Dunstan? In fact, it's already gone past Lake Dunstan. It's all the way down the river towards the dam. It's in all the small little bays and inlets. And it's an aesthetic disaster already, let alone the impact it'll have upon recreational boating and swimming in the summer to come. $25,000 seems almost as if it's a sop. It doesn't seem either a consequential amount of money nor a reality that there's a problem. And it certainly isn't going to stop the pathway management spread, which now is acknowledged as an issue. I just like to flag that at the very least we should be matching Lynn's offer. It was great to see them come to the party, I have to say. The Lake Dunstan Wanaka people have been on to me this morning. Sorry, Lake Dunstan people have been on to me already this morning saying that surely they can't be serious $25,000. They certainly, the local community is not accepting that that's an adequate response. And given the vast reserves of this council, given the particular and potential danger of this weed to other waterways throughout central Otago, why aren't we taking a stand now by contributing more money? So I just like to say that $25,000 should be at least double, and that if Lynn's are saying we'll put in 50, we'll match it, and if we can go and get some extra money from Contact Energy, so much the better. It'll just make it a more effective strategy.
Two things that Lynn's mentioned. They mentioned it is their responsibility to maintain that, or to deal with lake cycling and Lake Dunstan. And what's the other thing? Oh, well, basically, eradication at this stage is not feasible.
Well, not feed, spend the
so this is a maintenance program to control lagicide and then dump some for recreational use, basically.
It hasn't worked, though. I mean, that's why it's growing. That's why it's going to get into Waka Tipu, because it hasn't worked. That's why it gets worse every year. And yet we sit here and ignore it as a council. And then we finally, when we're pushed, prompted, embarrassed more into action, we say, here's 25k. That should do it. But it's not going to spread the weed. This aquatic, exotic invader, it is not going to stop that spread throughout the other lakes. And I'm just flagging that with you now. You wouldn't expect me to say any different.
Councillor Robertson.
I'd reluctantly support the $25,000 input, given that we do have an existing pest management plan, which has a outlined process for how it will be dealt with. As the chairman has just pointed out, Lynns are the owners of the land. That land has been impacted by water management in the area, and there are existing agreements between parties as to how their recycling will be managed. Totally accept what Councillor Laws is saying and what the local community is saying, but the time to appropriately deal with that is the regional pest plan review, where we can comprehensively look at those issues and submissions fairly from across Otago. We've got to put it in the light of the fact that we've got a lot of weeds and pests across Otago and principally need to deal with them all. So I think this is a between the two of okay, it's not our responsibility and okay, we need to leap in guns blazing. It sits between that with 25,000 for now, but it's not okay to go away because we have got the pest plan up for review and people will be able to have a good say then.
Thank you for that. Councillor Bell.
Through you, Mr Chairman, I do struggle perhaps with the 25,000 being just general rate right across CODC and QLDC. I think it was discussed in the panel that they were the beneficiaries of that pathway funding, but my own personal view is when you're looking at Central Otago, you've got people at the top of Moa Flat, you've got people in Race Junction and everywhere else, Kokona, which is a long way from Lake Dunstan. I honestly believe we should be approaching this rate on the same basis we approach the rate on the same basis as the pine, modern pines, not across CODC or just QLDC. And I base that on the fact that not everybody is a direct benefit. It's the whole community. There's no single, it's the wider community, I mean, of the region.
Yeah, okay, except that I think part of the discussion was it probably is a maintenance project, and it's similar to the river management in the respective district council areas. Yeah, but I accept what you're saying. Councillor Woodhead.
Mr Chairman, I'll just note, and my total actually came to 10, but the staff's come to 20. It was only 20 submissions on this, out of 826. Which surprised me a little bit with the recent publicity and conversation in the media. And so,
well, can I just answer that? There's a petition coming your way in 2 weeks' time with almost 1,000 signatures on. So I'm going to play the numbers game, you know.
No, but there's a community process. Every household got the communication.
Yes.
And 20 saw it as an issue.
Right, so we're actually going to respond on that, are we, Stephen? Is that how we actually do
no,
the
No, it's not a bug. Mission? But I'll just, okay. If it was a serious matter... Mr.
It Stephen. Is a serious matter, and that's why almost 1,000 people have signed the petition.
Okay, we must move on, I think.
Yes.
Okay. Any further comment on that? We'll move on to pests. We had some submissions on that. I don't think there's anything that really stood out apart from the fact we're about to review our pest management plan for Otago in the 17-18 year. Rates, so the submissions on our rates, about the rate increase. Anything there, Mr Donnelly? I don't think there's anything stood out.
No, just the revenue and financing policy will be reviewed as part of the LTP, and we felt that that was the more appropriate avenue to deal with that.
Yep. Councillor Scott.
Yeah, I mean, just to follow up the comments that Councillor Robinson made, you know, I think that makes sense. You know, there's a bit of frustration, you know, about labour cycle and so forth, and understandably so. But we've got the opportunity to actually have a look at this with fresh eyes.
Yep.
I mean, you know, and it doesn't happen every year, and I think we should really put some energy into this PES plan. And there are other issues as well. It's no rabbits and all these frustrating issues. And I think, let's get a blank piece of paper and say, well, where do we really want to be in 10 years' time, 20 years' time with these PES?
Yep, no good. Well, Councillor Lean's already got us on the case.
Yeah, no, first
thing we got we're on, mate. Tomorrow.
No, exactly. So, you know, that's in there.
Okay, happy with that. Okay, we'll move on to funding requests. Some of the main ones, Roach covered an in, won some money for barbecue, which we declined. Anything to add to that? We did advise about the Environmental Enhancement Fund. Maybe some possibilities for them there, and I see they've been in the media lately with some issues with their project down along the side of the harbour. Irrigation New Zealand.
Is this landscaping in the winter?
Yeah. Irrigation New Zealand. Just jump in if you want any comment about these. Community heating in the Alex area.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think this is possibly a good project further down the track.
Yeah.
But if there's genuine community support for getting something a trust in place, then they need to get that trust established themselves. The request was actually for the cost of establishing the trust. And I'm sure OSC as an organisation would be happy to work with the trust once established to help investigate the opportunities here. And I just think we need to be clear on that.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman, I would like that when we do send that back, that they did state in their submissions that there were two pilot schemes that they would like to look at. One was Dunstan Hospital, that they'd only spoken with the general manager of the Dunstan Hospital, and the other was the chief executive they'd spoken to with regards to CODC. But some of those pilot schemes is somewhere where I do believe, through you, Mr. Chairman, Councillor Woodhead, you are correct. That is the sort of support that we perhaps could be reflecting from that. We need us to know where we're going to head, especially with air quality and everything else. This is a pretty good thing.
Yeah. Thank you. That's the Lord.
The reason that they only came here for $2,000 was because they actually didn't want to scare the horses. We've got a chief executive's fund that we can disperse to investigate issues or is considered to have environmental consequences. So the idea of this is that they were actually looking for funding the scoping study into a heat transfer system that had the potential to provide heating into the Alexandria area and reduce emissions from wood burners and things like that in the future. They've got a good science background of people and things like that. The reason for the decline, as I understand, is, well, we're not going to set up your legal costs. But I don't think that we should decline them on the basis that your project isn't worthy of future financial support. And I think that in any letter that we send them, we should say, listen, we're declining you on this specific thing, but in general, you're heading in the right direction. Come back and see us when you've got to a stage where you really are going down that research path and present to us and we'll look at this with fresh eyes.
No, the panel's got no disagreement with that at all. We talked about that. We can, at some stage further down the track, there possibly could be a role for us to be involved.
But it'd be nice to send them that message
to
encourage them in that research.
Yep. Okay, and someone want to see the comment? New Zealand Marine Studies Centre. I guess it was declined on the basis of sort of funding operational costs, which we weren't so happy about. Any comment? No. 3D Food Farms Freshwater. Chris Arbuckle committed on this. He's the facilitator for it.
Mr. Chairman, so this has a national link, this project, and there was examples given of where other councils are involved, but I think that, well, I don't think I know, they were different circumstances that drove the councils to be involved there, but it certainly had more of a commercial focus to it, and the Taupo beef example was a classic of that, and I still struggle with and in fact the next one is the same with the Upper Clutha Water Group, that there's some challenges in those catchments, but I wouldn't put it as the number one issue for ORC, and we're dabbling, or the requests are asking us to step directly into some commercial farm advisory production advice type focus, and that's not our patch, and even the basis for this, why have you selected this catchment? I enjoy working with the landholders there. Well, sorry, that just doesn't get us involved in my view. So, and we're talking large sums of money, so...
I think the thing is that doesn't probably address that, what we say in our water plan and what we want to achieve in our water plan.
No, it doesn't line up.
Directly enough, that's the problem.
Correct.
Councillor Kempton.
Yes, I agree entirely with that, and I mentioned this earlier when we were looking through this stuff, is that, but also, I don't think that we're declining these things because... for any reason to do with the Lake Wanaka catchment, right? The fact that we might consider where that might sit in the priorities for catchments, where in principle we're saying this is essentially a commercial issue, a commercial proposition. It does happen to have, and we shouldn't deny that it does happen to have a bit of an environmental tail, and that's a good thing. No question about that, but I don't. But the way it reads, it is that it's, well, the main reason is because it's about Lake Wanaka, and I don't think it is. And similarly, I think that the other point around the Upper Clutha Water Group, we need to focus on our implementation of our various quantity water plans or aspects of our water plan. I think it's we need to be careful not to be funding initiatives that might actually dilute the message. And again, I don't think that that's necessarily about one. So I'd be, if it was possible, in responding to those people to just change the emphasis of action to the principle rather than where it is. I'd appreciate that.
And I think the thing is too, our staff will be working in that area as they're working in North Otago and South Otago, and there will be opportunities for those people to work with us.
Yeah.
Okay, happy with that. Significance and engagement policy, strategic assets. A wee bit of confusion about this, perhaps could have been a wee bit clearer in our discussion document, but it generally has been well received. Okay.
Yeah, get on that.
Impact on estimates, Mr. Donnelly, I don't know if you want to comment here.
Yeah, can do. Well, the only two changes from the previous estimates are the additional 100,000 for Wilding Pines, which is going through as a uniform targeted rate, so that will increase to just over $1 per household to $2, and the extra 25,000 for Lake Recycling, which is general rate funded. So when that's added in, the general rate goes up to a 14.7% increase, and I believe it was 14.6 previously, so it hasn't really made too much increase.
Now, the rest of the paper is about financial aspects, targeted rates, general rates, etc., balancing the budget, fees and charges. Are there any comments on any of those issues?
Can I just clarify, so we have put the negatives open into general rates rather than to central?
No, so, well, it's a sub-regional general rate, so it's a general rate that is only being applied to CODC and QLDC.
But Graham's raised the objection, and I'll second you of the motion. That can I say, just before I do that, can I ask the next question? Where does Wallabies get funded out of?
That's a regional general.
Regional.
Right? So people in Dunedin pay for Wallaby control.
Mm.
Yes.
Okie dokie. All right, well that puts it into perspective, doesn't it, Graham?
Yes.
Yes. Could you, if you want to move the motion, I'll second it on the basis that this is the time to raise that issue.
Yeah, I'll move that we should be looking at it at a regional rate rather than across the CODC and the QLDC on the basis that I spoke before.
Just to answer Wallaby's question, I think this is a new incursion into Otago, and we've talked about the fact that maybe somewhere down the track we will have to change our rating policy with regard to that, looking at beneficiaries, exacerbators, but the fact that it's a new incursion, that's why it's been deemed appropriate to fund it out of the general rate.
And the principle's still the same, Dave, which is that...
Okay, we've got a motion that that rather than being funded on a sub-regional basis, it should become funded across the whole region. Any comment on that?
Well, can I just seconding that motion, just say the logic is that the damage to the lakes, should this lake recycling spread, would have regional effect upon the economy and the tourism trade and recreational values of many people who do not actually live in central Otago or Queensland. They are the host of the sector and elk activity, but the whole region benefits and gains from it. And given the large numbers of folk from outside these two districts who live within the Otago district who enjoy those amenities in the central Otago region as part of their family and recreational activities. It's $25,000, I just think the principle's important. And on the Wallabies one, Doug, yes, it may be a new incursion, but nevertheless, there's still a little old lady sitting in South Dunedin who is struggling to work out why she's paying for Wallaby control in many a tote, but it's just bye-bye.
Okay, any further comment, Councillor Scott?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's sort of neither. It's sort of somewhere in between. You know, like, it's not necessarily all QLDC, CODC, always responsibility, and it's not necessarily an equal responsibility across the region. To me, they get more value than the little old lady living in South Dunedin. But maybe she should contribute a lesser amount.
Thank you. Any further comment?
We end up
So I look at the 25 in as a proportion of the total. And in under the heading of this isn't our responsibility, but we're prepared to contribute some. I'm not sure where this weed's going to spread to. Yes, there's a risk into Waka Tipu, and we've seen some incursions get started there. But actually, they're coming out of the Kawarra, as we is our understanding, and where there is an established, it has populated, as we were well aware as a region, actually, when the lake was formed, all available habitat in Lake Dunsman, and it's been in that position for a number of years, is my understanding. And there's no surprises there, because we knew it was going to happen. And so I'm not sure, apart from the link up the road from Dunsman to Lake Waikatip, and particularly the Franklin Arm where the boat ramps are, where the other risks are of spread. And it's clearly right down through the Fluke system, and it'll be, because the bits break off and float through, and imagine if there's some available habitat, it would be populated. As it is down the Clutha between Wanaka and Lake Dunstan, it's actually in the river there in places where it's able to establish. So yeah, I don't quite accept some of the points of Councillor Laws. This is, if there's a total of 200,000 spend, this will be 12% of it or something at 25. And we're protecting high value bathing and swimming areas in the pest strategy at the moment. And the primary beneficiaries of that, as I see, is the people of that area. And there'll be holidaymakers part of that, but they'll be owning a house or renting a crib or something and contributing in that way. So I'm comfortable with the recommendation as it stands.
Yeah, Councillor Neil.
Yeah, thank you, Mr Chairman. I actually agree with the people who moved the motion that the lakes belong to all the people in the region. And in actual fact, if we had an issue out here in the ocean, we wouldn't be just targeting Waitaki, Dunedin City and South Dakota District Council to try and clean that up. It's not a lot of money involved, it's just a principle. So yeah, I support the motion.
Okay. Yeah, the signing, further comment? I guess as mentioned earlier, we're going to have a good look at our funding policy through the annual long-term plan next year. Well, as I mentioned earlier, for example, we do have river management rates that are funded sub-regionally, even though there's obviously a lot of outside benefit to others. So, and to be fair, the hearing panel did spend quite a bit of time talking about this. Okay, any further discussion? I'll put it then. All those for the change, which is funding from going from a sub-regional basis to a across the region basis. No doubt Lauren can get the words right. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Against?
No.
No. The ayes have it.
Sorry.
Oh, we don't want.
he just said the ayes have it.
Two ladies asked.
So you've called for...
Sorry, you've called for the ayes?
Yeah.
Okay, no, sorry.
Sure. Okay, now if there's nothing further, any further comment about the finances of the last few sections, we'll move on to the recommendation. Now there's six recommendations there. I won't read them out, they're pretty straightforward. Any comment on that? If not, I'll put the recommendations all in one. Sorry, Councillor Scott.
Look, I was just gonna make a general comment to thank the hearing panel. I think they've done a pretty good job. I was trying to think about an appropriate word. I think there's an element of realism, about what's being sort of proposed here. Councillor Laws, you've had some concerns in the Central Otago area. I mean, there are things happening up there. There's the Queenstown office, Wilding Pines, Lake Recycle, Lake Snow, the public transport, the acceleration of minimum flows, the funding and deemed permits. There's things that are going on, but there's a touch of realism that it's not a blank cheque. The general rates is proposed to go up by $934,000, and I won't be brave enough to express that as a percentage. That's a significant situation. So there's an element of realism that these issues have been recognised and acknowledged, and some work going towards, but the realism is that it's not a blank cheque and we're moving forward.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. Yeah, I'd just like to say too, probably this process has highlighted, so much what we've got to do. There's a huge workload out there and somehow we've got to fund it, reasonably equitably and fairly. Councillor Laws?
I'd just like to endorse what Councillor Scott said in terms of personally thanking those members who are on the hearings committee. It's an onerous responsibility to go through a draft and end of plan with this director's submission and provide your expertise towards that, so I'd like to say thank you. And nothing that I say in terms of whether or not there's judgment reflects on the character or on the hard work that the members put in, so thank you. The second thing I'd like to say is Port of Otago, I still want to raise this issue now about that dividend being too light. It's a huge asset, I think. We've got a massive rate increase proposed this year, and certainly I have no doubt next. The $1.5 million, Stephen, is still a very small increase. The dividend that the asset base that they have, the lack of debt on their balance sheet, it's just extraordinary. And that one way of deferring that, particularly as we've gone through a one-off transition year, in some ways, which is the with the civil defence being added into the overall budget, so it's a massive impact upon rates, is to see us get a higher dividend out of the Port of Otago this financial year. And I want to flag it now. I think it's an underutilised asset for the Otago Regional Council. I don't believe it's performing in terms of dividend structure anywhere near it should be with its balance sheet. And given its excellent adjudication by its directors in terms of spreading its asset base, and the success of their strategy in doing so, I think it's now time to share some of those gains with the wider regional ratepayers. So I do just want to flag that I think our $1.5 million increased dividends are still too light, and that we should be asking for $2 or $2.5 million for the next 2 years, given that they can certainly afford it with their balance sheet.
No, I can't say that. It has been flagged by others that we want to have a closer look at Port Otago, you know, from its ownership structure and all that through the long-term plan next year. It has been flagged already 2 or 3 times. So, okay, we hear what you're saying.
No, it's just that I want to put that money in this year. You know, if you've got a $1.5 million dividend, why can't we in actual fact ask for another $1 million dividend to offset the rate increases from this year?
So, look, Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to that. So, there is a process for that, and the directors have responsibility for the company, and it's not something that we can decide or should, in fact, at this table and bring up. There's several processes. Firstly, there's a statement of corporate intent, which will come to us shortly in a draft form. But I think actually that it's more important, as you've just identified, to have a wider look and think as we move from here to our long-term plan in 12 months' time, and what is the wider vision for Port Otago. We understand where it's sitting now, and what are the pressures on us, and what are the pressures on the company, because they've got a business to run. They've got a business to maintain and sustain and etc. So we need to be having those conversations in an informed way. So let's move through the next period with a statement of corporate intent, understanding we've got our budget in place for next year. But as part of the long-term plans, we've said let's have a good look at it and in a holistic sense, not just a numerical dividend from the port.
Councillor Neil.
Mr Chairman, just as well on being record, thanking the panel for all their work. Of course, the council should thank staff for their tremendous effort that they've put into this annual plan, right from the very beginnings of the original drafts to the later drafts, and then how they've communicated with the public and enabled them to make submissions and to let the democratic process take it. Well done, staff.
Yeah, thanks for Sam. You just
get into it.
No, I just echo those words. I'm very appreciative of all the work staff have done. It's been a massive effort. Just one thing I'd say is I made a bit of a recommendation to the hearing panel for next year. Perhaps the submission period should be a wee bit shorter and give us a bit more time to read everything. It was all a bit tight this year, and I think we've taken that on board, so that's all good. Okay, we haven't had the recommendations yet. I'll move the recommendations. Someone second them, please. Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Well, sorry, we're taking a while, but we'll move on. The next one is an amendment to the Regional Passenger Transport Plan on page 35. This was an amendment to the Concord Green Island Community Link route off peak hours. We had a delegation come to see us about that some time ago now. I think it would have been during the last council session. In July 2016, we endorsed the community consultation process to have a look at this. On 22nd of February this year, the council approved a draft amendment to the Regional Passenger Transport Plan. And moving on from that, we had the submission period. It was 52 submissions. Three presented their submissions, and Councillor Robertson and Councillor Moon handled that. And yeah, that's what we've got there. Maybe Councillor Robertson might like to say something.
Thank you. Yes, this has been honoured to be involved in again. And obviously we've had ongoing input from the community and presentations to council in public forum, but moving through to the formal process here of an amendment to the addendum, I guess we had the 52 submissions, and all of those were in favour except for one of extending through to Green Island in off-peak hours with some suggestions as well. So we listened, and we were really grateful for people. They put a lot of effort into their submissions and to those that came along in person, and then also sat through the public deliberations too. So we had limited scope, I suppose. We were just looking at an extension through to Green Island. We wanted to reflect, though, what people had said, and so Green Island is a main centre and does warrant a good service between Concord and then through on into town. So we wanted to change to initially during off-peak hours so that in future it doesn't require a total formal plan change if indeed the council's of a mind to extend and the uptake is very good from those communities, it could be in peak hours as well. So that was one change, and the other one is we heard loud and clear again from many of the submitters that a direct link through to South Dunedin would be advantageous, and there are a number of reasons for that. That community wants to access South Dunedin in an efficient and easy manner. So we've put in a dotted line so that if the council is again of a mind to extend that service, then it wouldn't need to be a formal consultation process. But we didn't have the scope during this hearing to be able to do that at this point. There's obviously, as we've talked about before, some ramifications of extending through, and some of those are impacts to the existing connecting services, or perhaps a time delay between connections so that people may have to wait. And we would need to understand through some consultation whether or not that's what community want or how they want that service to operate and if they do. So I think there is an opportunity, perhaps even in the near future, to look at that. I don't know if Mr Collins wants to comment over here on the possibility of staff looking into that. So there's a dotted line now recognising that perhaps there is an ability to extend that service through South Dunedin somehow into the future. Otherwise there are a lot of really good comments that have been noted as well by submitters, and I felt that it was really good to have a fully public deliberation process so that people were able to sit and hear exactly what was said. So thank you again to staff who put a lot of time and effort into preparing this plan change, and the recommendations are there before you. I don't know if Councillor Noon wants to expand on anything.
Good.
I'll see
you. Yep. Thank you for that. Anything else? Sounds like a good news story. Mr Collins, is anything you wish to add to it?
No, just to pick up on Councillor Robinson's comment about providing a connection up into the course of Fenn area. It's certainly something that council should keep in their mind, not necessarily running a complete service all the way through to South Dunedin, but they're continuing on with the theme of providing connections that will allow for the journey to occur, albeit on maybe modern trips.
I'll certainly support this paper, this amendment, but I just think we need to be a little bit careful about the nature of the bus network that we decided in the planning process in 2014 that we would run. And it wasn't a destination service to the extent that you can go from anywhere in town to anywhere else without getting off the bus. And we put more focus on the ability to transfer for no additional cost on most services. And that was a matter of strategic principle. We need to be careful that we don't undermine that. And we need to make sure that we make the transfer process as good as we possibly can. It's, in pretty much any public transport system in the world, there's the experience of being on the transport, but there's the experience around transfer, and transfer is a reality in most efficient systems. And so I think we just need to be careful about that principle and not end up with, or not attempt to provide a stay on the bus destination style service, because that's pretty much impossible, I think.
Thanks for that. Any other comment? And now I think there's three recommendations there. Someone like to move those?
I'm happy to move.
Councillor Robertson, second by Councillor Noon. Any further comment? If not, I put the recommendation. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The next one's another passenger transport paper regarding Arthur Street, Canongate, Russell Street community survey. As we all realised, some time ago we had a delegation from people in this area coming here requesting that we should reinstate. Sorry, we're on page 39. You right, Sam?
I'm on 186.
Page 39.
Oh, sorry, I'm on the hard copy.
39, hard copy.
Oh, right.
Good old hard copy.
You haven't got all the attachment.
Yeah, so that gets you.
The one that we get a hold of.
Sam's electronic,
he's there. Everyone happy? Everyone see it? Good. As I was saying, we had a delegation that came to talk to us about reinstating reinstating a service in this area on the 7th of December, and on the 8th of Feb, the report came to staff resolved that some targeted consultation in this area would be a good idea, and then so that moved on to a mail drop in the area. There were a bit of a problem around that, but I think it was rectified, so there was a mail drop to over 700 residential households etc. in that area. So that was the process, and staff have taken the results from that survey and given consideration to it, and hence we have a recommendation that the service or service changes should not happen to the regional passenger transport plan. That's probably a fairly brief summary. Councillor Hope.
Thank you. I've just got one question. I looked at this. Now, on page, if you've got the hard copy, on page 44, that's the last of the survey results, am I right? So you've got Phoenix 1, probably the survey form we want to hear from you on page 1, and then on page 44 is all things. Now, am I right, or have I missed something, that I cannot see any comments from any of the passengers? For example, just reading Appendix 2, this is the variation of the Regional Public Transport Plan for Green Island and Postal. There are lots and lots of pages of general comments. Yeah, am I right that I cannot see that, or have I missed that for the Arthur Street Canongate? There's 14 lines that you can write comments on, and there's nothing here in our report. But there must be comments from these people.
Yeah, no, what you observe is true. Perhaps I could ask Mr. Collin if he would like to comment about that.
So if I can, through the Chair, we haven't provided a summary of the comments. More than happy, if Council wanted to defer the decision on this matter, to provide the Councillors with a complete copy of all the submissions, or the responses if they wish. Generally, if I can generalise the responses, those that provided responses were in support of reinstating the service. There wasn't any significant variation from that theme, and staff felt the statistical results actually supported that commentary was coming through. So apologies if councillors were expecting a summary of the comments. Our aim was to try and get the responses to the survey, and in particular the potential uptake of the service that was reinstated, back to council in time so that the timely decision was made.
Thank you. Councillor Hope, are you happy with that?
Yes and no. I would like to see those comments. I'm sorry I've been difficult, but I think it's interesting, because that's often where you pick up the snippets of information that are useful and are helpful, and then I feel that we've just been completely thorough.
Councillor Woodhead, you are next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just picking up on some of Councillor Kempton's comments on the previous topic, and just a reminder here, I suppose. So, the regional or the public transport plan process that we went through a couple of years ago with respect to Dunedin was a very thorough and robust, lots of consultation and detailed hearings, and working forward to actually delivering some new services, which were the first of which were put in place 12 months ago. And the primary drivers were ensuring the routes were as direct as possible, that there was an increase in frequency of service, and because there was significant criticism of the old system and route structure in particular, which was not always consistent. There'd be 5 days a week would be some routes, and the weekends would be different, etc., etc. It was quite complicated and certainly difficult for people to understand. And we were looking at changing the framework or the model of the whole system. So I think we need to remind ourselves of that when we get these applications from the community. The Green Island link was a link that we actually severed, and we've just dealt with that different circumstance to this one. So when you make that sort of change, there will be some people that have a different service to what they've had in the past and may have to walk a little further or to a different bus stop. I'm concerned that we, by picking these topics off one at a or areas off one at a time, that we may incrementally undermine the high level drivers or the high level principles that we put in place for the previous plan change and the route structure and fares, etc. And if we keep going at this process, we'll undermine the intent of the whole system and all the change to the system. So happy to consider applications, as we've had in this case from a segment of the or one area of the community, Canongate and Arthur Street area. But I just think we need to be very careful in making incremental amendments. So I support, looked at the data, had a walk around that area myself. I think, as Councillor Kempton has reported to us in the past, he did the same. And I support the staff's conclusion here that we stick with the existing. And I think we need to do that today. There has been some infrastructure and some other decisions that, whilst we were waiting to make this one, were put in abeyance and put to one side. So for clarity of both community and staff to allow to move on with the bigger program, I think we need to make this decision today, and I support the recommendation to leave it as it currently runs and not reinstate.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I'm taking quite a lot of drugs at the moment, legally, so I'm sometimes missing a bit. Can I just ask on page 40, please, that on the hard copy email, I'm trying to decipher the survey results. It goes before change, since change, and if reinstated. And before change was the changes in August 2016. Since the change is what happened since then, so it's currently the status quo. And the third one says, well, if it was reinstated, this would be what would happen. Have I got that right?
I think so, yep. Yeah.
So in other words, if I look at that, then there would be an increase in patronage if the service was reinstated, and quite a significant increase. If I read that right or right, is that correct?
Yeah, no, it's correct. And that was
is that based on that survey result?
Expected. Okay.
Right,
yep.
Okay. Then the next question I have is cost. Maybe it was in an earlier paper and I missed it. Could well have been the case. Is there a cost difference between the reinstatement of the service and the currency? What is the cost difference between those two services, that which is proposed by ourselves and that which would be with the amendment of the service being added or altered?
Reinstated.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Collins.
If I can answer probably both questions. The first one, the columns you see in the survey results are the community's expression of their intent post if the service was reinstated. There will be a cost in relation to the service if it is reinstated. It's stated within the paper that staff have not calculated at that point. We will have to get in some external consultants to give us some assistance with current workloads to, one, re-establish what the timetable would look like, what impacts there might be in relation to the coordination of services within the central hub, and then negotiating with the operator for the cost of the reinstatement. Staff haven't undertaken that work at this point on the basis that we understood the council were going to be making a principal decision as to whether or not the service would be reinstated. There is adequate funding within the budget. We may have to adjust as the paper suggests and potentially defer the introduction of the additional internet services to accommodate the reinstatement of the service.
Which sort of leads to the next third question, and it sort of answers your point, Stephen. My experience of strategy is that strategy is a lovely thing, but that you can best assess whether or not it's working by looking at the detail. So, you know, I know that sometimes you go, oh, shit, this is incremental, but and this is ad hoc, but sometimes it's how it works at a detail level that determines whether or not the strategy is working. But have I got this wrong or have I got this right? More people would use the bus, very simply, if the service was reinstated, according to their survey.
That's what they...
Councillor Robertson.
Would it have flow-on effects through the rest of the network, though, potentially? I'm not exactly sure. I don't think the paper's covered that. What, you know, would there be time delays, etc., for the rest of the connections? So that possibly, I mean, yeah, it looks as though we would have an increase in patronage from this area, but would it have ramifications for the rest of the route? I'm not sure.
Councillor Scott?
Yeah, look, I struggle with this paper, to be honest. With respect, Mr. Collins has said he expected governance to take a principal ruling on this particular matter. I think if that was the case, then we wouldn't have asked for the survey. And the survey was asked for, and I'm trying to understand it. And I think from what I can read here, there was a sample size of 553 residential households, of which 95 answered the survey. One of my immediate questions was, for those people that are renting, whether they actually had the opportunity to answer the survey. I'm going to ask that question, Mr. Chair.
Yep. A little bit, sir.
Yep. If I can, through the Chair, every residential unit provided with a survey form for the individual unit prior to the close of the survey, and we've received, as I say, 95 respondents. The reason why we also sent the survey to the non-residential owners was not because we necessarily wanted the ratepayers' view, but we didn't want to make an assumption that they were permanently non-residential.
Yeah. And okay, thank you. And when I look at this, I really don't know how significant the data is. You know, whether it's for example, there was a survey that was done by the communications in relation to farmers, and they're able to say that percentage change was significant, statistically significant or not. I don't see that here. And then there's the anomaly at the bottom, because, I mean, what it's basically saying is before the change in a certain sense, then typically it's reduced. But then what it subsequently says, lower down, it says that in May 2017, the patronage of people boarding was similar to what it was in May 2016. So there doesn't seem to have been a change in terms of the current to the previous. Mm-hmm. If I understood that correctly, Mr. Chair, Mr. Collins.
If I can through the Chair. Now, as the report quite clearly states, the service is now running as a through service, so it's now combined with the Waverley connection as well.
Okay.
Which makes it very, very difficult to ascertain specifically for this part of the service what the actual impact is. We've asked the community for their views on how they believe they used the service previously, how they use it now, and how they would use it in the future. We haven't tried to assume or make any assumption about how real those numbers are in relation to the community response. What we have, however, done is given council an opportunity to see what the impact on that service as it now stands, and that's the combined patronage for both services, how it compares with the previous month before the changes were made. What that does show, and it's consistent with what we've been telling council all along, is that as we make changes, and the types of changes council are making, we will disenfranchise and lose some customers. The ultimate aim is to actually grow patronage across the network as a whole. We don't have the statistical analysis or the technology available to us to actually get down to the individual block at this point. We will do next year as the new ticketing system is introduced.
But you know, like, so we've asked the question, we've been pressurised by the community, we've asked for some information, and, you know, like, councillors rightfully asked, well, what's the incremental cost increase? And their response is, well, that's too hard. Even an estimate of something would have sort of helped us. Otherwise, we go back to Councillor Woodhead's basic principles, you know, we want a direct, efficient, you know, bus hub type of system, which of course we're committed to as well. So every time somebody puts their hand in the air, we're going to get in trouble if we keep tweaking the system. We need to trial it for a period of time to see what that holistic outcome actually is. Maybe we shouldn't have asked the question.
Maybe we shouldn't have made the change.
Councillor Moon.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Between a rock and a hard place with this one, but I'll share my thoughts and then I'll decide which way I'm going to vote, because I'm going to struggle. But I want to pick up on what Councillor Kempton said in the previous discussion, and the Chairman has alluded to as well. We're going through this transitional process from back to 2014 when we consulted, and I've heard Councillor Neil talk about being on that panel and listening to concerns from bus users, and there were going to be some winners and some losers, etc. And I've just heard that again from Mr. Collins. But as we move through this transitional phase to a new regime across the city, we're talking about a more direct, a more reliable, more efficient, safer, affordable system. And I think the problem we've got is that when you talk about an efficient bus system or passenger transport system, I think convenience, there is a trade-off. So what we've had historically, we've had something that's probably all those things, and it's been convenient. But now as we move to a more direct regime, the convenience has dropped off. And I suppose it's somehow, can we balance that, or do we just accept that that's one of the trade-offs as we move to the new regime? And at the back of my mind, when I visited the site and talked to some of the residents, my biggest concern would be around the disadvantaged, so the elderly or anyone who has accessibility issues. If we can accommodate those people, because I've got no issue with a student having to walk that extra 300 metres, 400 metres, not an issue. But I've got an issue with an elderly person or someone with a disability that's going to walk that distance with a couple of bags of groceries, for example. So the question for Mr. Collins is around the total mobility scheme. Is there any way that we could enhance that scheme to ensure that those people I'm referring to, those disadvantaged folk, that can be catered for in some way if we stick to our our long-term plan about what we want to achieve for a modern bus service for Dunedin.
If I can, through the chair, the total mobility scheme is primarily funded by the Regional Council and the NZTA for exactly the purpose that Councillor Moon is talking about. It is about providing for those with disabilities, and I'm not going to put ages in disability because it isn't for some, but their ability to actually walk and gain access to services is the disability, so it's a disability service. There are some fit 70-year-olds and there are 30-year-olds. That service is available to the entire community. With the way the service used to run, the fund was actually governed by the number of chips that the agencies passed out to the members. We do not have that governor on the system anymore now. The system is called card-based. The assessment criteria, we've been quite clear with the assessment agencies that our interest is not in the person's disability, but their ability to access public transport. And if they cannot access public transport, then they should be entitled, because of their disability, they should be entitled to be a member of the scheme. We spend a lot of time and effort educating our drivers, from talking to taxi drivers in relation to how the service is administered, and the communication staff are doing a lot of work on making sure we promote the scheme a heck of a lot better than we have in the past through our website and the other agencies. That said, it takes a lot for some of the elderly to put their hand up and say, I need a hand. So even yesterday we were talking with in a group, and I'm sort of getting off the subject a bit, but talking about with a group of interested stakeholders about how we convey information in relation to public transport and total mobility. And one of the people there is talking directly with the type of student we're talking about, and we've discussed about getting together and working out strategies how we can make it easier for people to get these sorts of subsidies and schemes. So that's a roundabout way of suggesting or answering Councillor Moon, our response that providing their access to public transport is inhibited because of their disability, and arthritis is a disability that's recognised, along with vision, other things as well. And the fact that we're increasing the walking distance does make it more inaccessible to some people.
Councillor Noonan, you comment on that?
I suppose you've got to put yourself in the position of someone who is disadvantaged because the level of bus service has been reduced. So, and I accept that some people won't, are either too proud or whatever, but I'm just hoping that we can have a total mobility scheme that is easy to access for people. It's not a challenge for them, and they don't have to front up with a medical certificate and all the bells and whistles to get over the line. So I suppose, I'm not sure whether you've answered my question or not, but maybe it's in time further down the track that we have, because you've talked about changes, and hopefully that they will make it easier for the scheme to be implemented. So maybe it's early days, but I would much rather we defer this decision on this report to come back to Councillor Hope's point. It would be good to see those additional comments as part of the submission process from that targeted area. It would also be good to understand Councillor Robinson's point, the impact, if any, well, want to understand if there would be impact if there was an additional service reinstated, not additional, reinstatement of the service. What would that mean if a bus went along Arthur Street, Cannon Gate down Rattray Street? What would it do to the rest of the network? And the other issue is around the impact in terms of finance or funding. So there's those three areas. So whether that's possible for us to have some answers in 2 weeks' time around
I just wrote down a note here. Maybe we should line the table for a wee bit. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I think 2 weeks' time, the amount of work that you're talking about, and we were talking about, there's a lot of analysis and a lot of number crunching to go into that. So you've got to look at the impact on the timetable and then the cost and everything. It's not going to be a 2 week exercise. Would that be correct?
If I can, through the chair, and just bring it into the context of the changes that we're actually gearing up to deliver on the 8th of September, there is physically no way we could deliver that style and the information that's being asked within that time frame. Even if we brought consultants on board, it just could not happen.
Okay, Councillor Scott, quickly.
Yeah, look, I think it's easier to keep asking, you know, questions and getting more information. At the end of the day, you're still going to make a decision. And maybe I'm contradicting what I said before in terms of, you know, principles and so forth. And following on from Councillor Noon, like, so my question, this mobility scheme, I don't 100% sort of understand it. Like, is it a subsidy? Are they disadvantaged? If you go on a mobility scheme, the disability scheme, are you disadvantaged financially in any way as opposed to the bus? You know, like, or you're basically paying the equivalent of a bus fare to go on a taxi, and you can do that whenever you wish?
If I can answer the chair, the total mobility scheme is a subsidy on taxi fare, 50% of the taxi fare,
yeah, still paid
to $25 maximum.
Yeah.
So it depends on the entire length of your journey. If you're trying to get a taxi to Palmerston, then there's no comparison. If I can use an example, we're one of the participants in the workshop yesterday struggled to get here because of the lack of bus services to her door. I personally offered to pay her taxi fare. She asked me for $5 when she got here, about the 20 to get home.
So, but just to answer the question, see, on this particular bus route, as an example, if I go on that mobility scheme, do I end up paying, you know, basically the same as what it would cost from a bus fare, or would I pay a little bit more? And can I do it as often as I wish?
The total mobility scheme does not limit the number of trips you take. Your budget limits the number of trips you take. If I can answer the question, I don't have at my fingertips the cost of a taxi fare, and I don't know where the individuals want to travel from this particular location. So I think, in fairness to Councillor Scott, I'm going to put him in an unfair position to provide advice to our council.
Councillor Tempton.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm absolutely appalled at the thought that we might consider kicking this can down the road again. What are we talking about here? Let's get back to some... First of all, we say that we make principled decisions. We're being asked to make a principled decision, and we can't. But yet, I've heard all my years on council, that's what we do around here. Now, let's think about this. One of the things that all of the best international research tells us about bus systems is that, yes, they are a balance between the needs of commuters and, shall we say, a social element.
Yep.
Now, we have shifted that balance slightly. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Right? But one of the things that it's told us, and we got this paper, one council or one committee round ago, is that patronage across our network has not suffered and in fact had increased slightly over the last 6 months or so. Alright? And the international research tends to tell us that a little more direct rather than less direct is the way to increase patronage. We have to think about service levels. Right? And I've told people this before, that in my walking around at an extremely slow pace and at a reasonable clip for a 65-year-old with a gang leg, I got from the corner of Canongate to the bus stop between, I think it was 6.5 minutes, going very, very slowly, and a reasonable clip for an old fella was 5 minutes, 10 seconds. Now, what I know is that the public transport system of Singapore has established standards and they're going to do their damnedest to meet them. And one of those standards is that that by 2021, everybody in Singapore will be able to access public transport with no more than a 7-minute walk. And that's Singapore. Okay, and we're Dunedin. So we've got to be realistic about the service that we're offering. I was disappointed that I understood that buses were a real hot potato in this area, and there were lots of people concerned about service levels. We got a 17% response on the basis of how it had been built up. I was actually a bit disappointed about that. I would say that it's rather strange that discontinuing a service is a good way to increase patronage. What I'm suggesting is that the results of this survey in my view are a bit subjective. And I rather suspect that if we do more, it just simply becomes less subjective. What we know is that this particular service has not had a significant increase or decrease in patronage since it was introduced. What we know is that the bus system that we've got now is in fact got a little bit of a ski jump at the end of its patronage nuggets. For God's sake, let's just get on with it. And I'd like to move the motion.
Thank you for that. We have a seconder, please.
I'll second that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Woodhead. Any further comment? No further comment. Last chance. Okay, if not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, the recommendation, all those in favour, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Against?
No.
Have a show of hands, please, for the recommendation.
I think, Mr. Chairman, we have to have a... What do you call it?
A division. People happy we have a division? Yeah, okay, thank you. All those in favour?
Yes.
Just wanted to get that done quickly. We're running behind time.
Yeah, missing lunch.
The information being that Council A sees this report being that Tangate, Russell Street and Arthur Street are not included in the Route 19. Councillor Bell?
Against.
Councillor Brown?
For the motion.
Councillor Zita? Councillor Hope?
Against.
Councillor Kempton?
For.
Councillor Gould?
Against.
Councillor Neal?
For.
Councillor Noon?
Against.
Councillor Robertson?
For.
Councillor Scott?
For.
Councillor Woodhead?
For.
Yeah, I think the recommendation is carried. Okay. Sorry.
I think
it was a majority, regardless of what figure it was.
Yeah.
He was against.
I was against.
Six, four.
Okay. We're running well behind time. We've made an executive decision up here. We'll stop for lunch now, and then we've got some people from the Yellow Eyed Penguin Trust who will speak after lunch. And then
so we'll adjourn this committee, and then have the technical committee, and then
convene the Financial Corp.
And we'll have a different chair for the second half of the reserve.
Everyone happy with that? So we'll break for 15 minutes or not much more. 15 minutes.
Yeah, yep.
Just ask the chair through, Mr. Chairman. So there's been a few changes in the contracts, I understand, coming up in terms of operators.
If I can through the chair, that's correct. Currently the services are all provided by GoBus. There have been changes as a result of the tender rounds, and now we see glitches with a greater holding in the network in the interim, bearing in mind that the business they currently hold will come up for tender next year.
and in that tender process, it's all their attributes. It's not just on price, it's all sorts of other little things as well.
Certainly, and going through the chair, unlike previous times we've used Lowe's conforming tender to select transport operators under the new PTOM environment, we're required under NZTA's procurement rules to use a quality based method. We have applied a 70% weighting to price and a 30% towards quality. For the council's reference, the outcome of this tender sees one of the contracts being awarded based on the quality component, so it's not the lowest price, and two of the contracts, including the Ridge Runner, being awarded to the tenderer who did submit the lowest price, but the outcome there wasn't a lot of difference between the two. It resulted in the quality assessment.
Thanks for that, Cameron.
Thank you. Any other queries or questions? If not, would someone like to move the recommendation that Council receives this report? Move Councillor Kenton, second by Councillor Scott. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Moving on to the financial report to 30 April 2017. Mr Donnelly, any comment, anything to highlight? Business as usual.
Largely business as usual. The surplus is a little bit bigger than it was the month before, and the activity project based report, the summary is there again at the end of the report. Again, the variances are largely in line with what they were the month before. Some of them have got slightly bigger, but the story is largely the same as it was previously.
Excellent. Thank you. Any questions or queries, Mr Donnelly? If not, someone like to move that the report we received.
Oh, sorry. There was one question around the national electronic ticketing system replacement. The variance of 1.378 million, is that a matter of timing, largely?
Yes, it is.
Councillor Lewis, are happy to move that the report was received? Did you put your hand up before?
No.
Oh, Councillor Kempton was.
Alright.
You happy to move the report we received? Excellent. Thank you. Signal Councillor.
Yep.
Anybody? Thank you. Any discussion? If not, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. And I believe that concludes the financial report meeting. Thank you very much, everyone. Welcome back, Councillor Boone.
Thank you.